It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. If you want a sense of just how much clothing the U.S. imports, look no further than the shirt on your back.
China and Vietnam shipped about $31 billion of apparel to the U.S. in 2023.
With new tariffs and a trade war, we're learning more about how garments are made.
Iris Acevedo is an adjunct instructor in the fashion design departments of Mount Mary University and Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. She owns Reworked by Iris. Iris, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me, Kate. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
What are the processes that go into making a garment that we simply don't see when we pull that shirt or that pair of jeans out of our closet? Can you give us a quick tour of what's involved?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. So when you pull that shirt out of your closet, what you don't see, first of all, is what was the innovation behind making of that shirt. The designer who was thinking about the person who was going to wear it, how it would fit, how it would feel on the body is part of the process, as well as like how will it look, the design aspect of it. So that's the first and foremost thing that people don't realize how much work goes into that thought process. And then what kind of fabric are you going to use to make that shirt? Where was that fabric made? How was it made? If it was cotton, where was it grown? The buttons, all of the things that go inside of the making of that shirt. And then the people who made your shirt and how much it cost and how much time it took for that person to make your shirt. And then that's just the beginning process. The other aspect of it is once it's done, like what markets is it going to go to? Who's going to distribute it? What stores are going to take it?
You have a sewing and design company in Milwaukee that you launched about 5 years ago. What led you to become an entrepreneur in fashion?
Honestly, I started learning. It's my second career. My first career was in academic advising, and I learned how to sew at the age of 30 after I had my first child, and I really fell in love with the process. And at the time I was married and I moved to the East Coast and ended up being a house mom after I had my second child, and I needed to bring in income. So I started sewing to make extra cash. And then when me and my ex split, I felt like it was a clean slate. It was time to start over, and I wanted to do it in a way that allowed me to be in my kids' life as well as do something that I really enjoyed doing. So that's how Sew House Apparel was born. That's the original name of my business. I recently rebranded, and I can talk about that in a minute, but I've been able to provide alteration services and custom services to local clients in the city of Milwaukee and the surrounding area for the last 5 years. So it's been very rewarding.
Also under your umbrella is sewing classes, I understand. Is there a growing maker's market of people who want to sew their own clothes? What are you experiencing?
Yeah, so there is a very large growing market of people who are learning how to sew again, which is really exciting. Most of that market, you do have local communities who are learning how to sew, as well as a very large online presence between online sewing schools or like sewing courses that people can purchase. YouTube is a huge resource for sewers. And then also the university is, we're seeing a growing number of students coming in who may have started off learning from YouTube. They're like, I think I want to do this.
When you look at the economics of this industry at the moment, we're seeing American imports billions of dollars in apparel and clothing materials every year. China and Vietnam are, you know, on our labels, are the top two contributing countries. And consumer price increases are going to be double-digit estimates for clothing in the short term. Are tariffs concerning to you in your line of work?
Yes. Yeah, so tariffs are concerning. What I've been seeing, because I try to keep an eye on the trends with what's happening. There are a lot of brands, especially small brands, who may have niched their brand by using something like Japanese denim, or, you know, they do their manufacturing overseas. And so the idea of having to deal with tariffs is concerning to them in terms of how they're going to be able to continue to produce what they're producing at a price that people can afford. And so that is, you know, that is something that I'm seeing. The other thing that I'm seeing is I know like we do a lot with China. And so people like producers of cotton in our country who like export cotton to China for manufacturing. I know there are some farmers who are concerned about that as well. That's what I've kind of been seeing.
Oh, so, you know, we're exporting that raw cotton to China. It is going through processes to get ready to be made into things like jeans.
Yeah, we are the number one consumer of denim, but we're not even in like the top 10 of manufacturers of denim.
So in terms of the materials that you use and that you teach in your coursework, are there certain apparel materials or textiles that are more sustainable that we should think about?
Oh, yes. Sustainability is huge. I teach textiles. That's like the number one class that I really teach. And I've shifted in the classroom to really focusing on natural fibers. There is a trend, again, towards moving away from the synthetics. So things like cotton, things like linen, the more traditional fibers that we're used to seeing. But also there's a lot of innovation with alternative plant fibers. So things like hemp are something that people are doing a lot of research around to see how that we can incorporate them into the textile industry for, you know, the making of clothes and different things. And then other things that are interesting, like milk fiber. People don't realize that you can actually make fabric out of milk.
What?
It's really fun. I have a lot of group projects with my students. And when we get to those kind of interesting fibers that you never think about, what could make fabric from, they get really excited and geeked out. And they come up with some cool stuff, some cool ideas.
Wow. this ability to produce, though, inexpensive, low-quality clothing, like that fast fashion, those $5 T-shirts, would the U.S. be able to open those types of factories? What do you think?
I think some people would arguably say that we have had some of those factories within our borders. You know, the garment district in L.A. has been reported over the years, different times, not properly porting their labor force. But I believe right now would be a really great time for us to think about how we can produce domestically and in a way that builds the economy for everyone, not just the person who wants to spend $30 on a pair of jeans. I think that we've put enough pressure on the fashion industry. We meaning, you know, people, consumers, the industry as a whole, people who are interested in sustainability and seeing things change, have put enough pressure where I think with everything that's going on with the tariffs, it's a great time to think about how can we, right, reopen ourselves up to producing our own things and not just consuming.
When you say we put pressure on, do you mean pressure in terms of trying to get things at cheaper? Or do you mean pressure to source those clothes more sustainably and for all the steps that go into that process?
Source sustainably. I think there's a growing movement towards, number one, for sure, the secondhand market has increased because of that. There's a lot of people who are really into thrifting as a way of practicing a sustainable lifestyle. But also there are a growing number of independent designers who have created a nice little niche industry for themselves, being, you know, more sustainable in their design practice. So you may get a high quality pair of jeans made from a small designer who may only produce 25 pairs of jeans in a line, right? But it has a quality fabric. It's well made. It's designed to last. So there are people who have been slowly but surely, we don't see them yet on the grand scale. Even Levi's for a while has, you know, they came out with a couple of sustainable fibers, whether it's like recycled cotton. They did have a line a couple years ago with hemp. Hemp can be what's called cottonized. So it can be processed in a way where it's soft and produced in a way that you can use the same to create cotton, like cotton fabric from the cotton plant. So it looks just like denim, but instead of cotton, it's hemp.
On the scale that you, Iris, is at, what have you learned by running your own label, by running your own brand?
It's a lot of work, and you have to have a lot of passion and dedication to what you're doing. Because at the beginning, a lot of times you're on your own. You know, you have to be able to think about what can I do just me until you can get to that place where you can scale and open the door for opportunity for others. So that's like the biggest thing is you got to really have a clear focus and a passion and a dedication. I'm going for the long haul. I'm not going for quick gains. You know, I recognize this is a marathon and not a sprint.
Iris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That is Iris Acevedo, who owns a sewing and apparel business in Milwaukee. We're hearing the perspective of Wisconsinites in the fashion industry amid trade war concerns. Joining us now is Robert Benke, president and founder of the Madison-based clothing brand Fair Indigo. Mariana Otoya is here. She and her brother run their family's apparel business. It's based in Lima, Peru. Mariana, let's learn more about your family apparel business. And I understand it was founded by your parents. How did this idea to make apparel come together?
It was a business that my parents started a little bit more of 48 years ago.
Wow.
It started a few years before that when my mother, she worked at the production ministry here in Peru. And she worked many projects with different groups of artisans and a lot of handwork. And that's how they decided to get these products and get it to a standard quality that it could be exported to different parts of the world. It was kind of an adventure at that time.
Robert, pick it up from here and the role you had in Fair Indigo in the story.
At the time we met Mariana and her family, it was 2012, and we had been in business about 6 years. It had its ups and downs, and we were sort of still finding our way in terms of what kind of products we could make and what kind of products our customers would love. And, you know, we founded Fair Indigo as a fair trade apparel brand. So we were focusing on finding facilities that paid workers a living wage and treated them, you know, with respect. We were working in Peru with some other suppliers, and the agent that we were working in down there, he arranged all our meetings for us. And on the last day, he said, "Oh, there's one more place I want to stop at." And we said, "No, Sergio, we don't have time. We have our flights, you know, at 9 o'clock. It was myself and my designer at the time, and 45 seconds and our jaws just dropped. At the time, they were doing handiwork for kids' dolls, but really amazing, amazing detail and quality. And I wasn't an expert in that area, but my designer was. And she said, "Robert, this is, we don't find this kind of work anywhere. This is amazing, amazing work." We met Elsa and Javier, who are Mariana's parents, that day. Within 10 minutes of knowing them, we felt like, you know, we have to do our audits. We have to do all the things we do to certify that businesses are indeed fair trade and paying living wages, et cetera. But in our gut, we knew like this was going to be a great place.
Fast forward, if you would, to the world business climate as you see it now and the White House tariffs. Mm-hmm. What comes up for you? What concerns do you have?
You know, for us, there is a new tariff. Peru and the United States have had a mutual free trade agreement for several years. So we pay 0% tariffs on each other's products. Now we are paying 10% on our product that comes from Peru. Is it fun? No. Is it, do we feel it? Yes. We are fortunate enough that it's only 10% and we can sort of try to work around that as best we can. And one silver lining here, this will maybe inspire people to think a little harder about the clothing that they buy, because some of the what was formerly very cheap clothing is going to become more expensive.
Mariana, thinking about how apparel factories can operate in other countries of the world under very harsh working conditions, it seems like that is not the case inside your company. How do you make that so?
I think it has a lot to do with how the business started. It's a family-owned business, and we started from a family relationship with everybody that we work with. Hmm. We have very long relationships with our employers. I mean, like, we know their families, and we're also very close to the workshops that we work with the farmers. I have two kids, a 15-year-old and 12-year-old. And for example, on Saturday, we want to visit the cotton farms, and we go as a family and I take them and they meet the farmers and, you know, like we just share everything.
Robert, learning about this system that Mariana is describing, and when I think about the clothes on me that the tags say made in China or made in Vietnam, what would it take to replicate this type of production system and open a garment factory doing what Mariana is doing, but doing it here in Wisconsin?
Very challenging on the cotton part because we can't grow cotton in Wisconsin, but we could get cotton from South Carolina, for example. But we haven't made a lot of apparel in the United States for a very, very long time. One of the main reasons is because, to be quite honest, it's hard work that not a lot of people would want to do for 8 hours a day. Where we work in Peru, the apparel production is sort of where it was here many, many decades ago, where it was an aspirational job. You know, the wages are much higher in the United States than they are in developing countries. So I think part of the reason that there isn't a lot of production in the United States anymore is because the clothing would be quite a bit more expensive to make it here. I think there's definitely a growing movement for doing things in a sort of small batches. So I know that some technical and trade schools are reintroducing sort of the old school apparel making skills that was happening before the tariff situation. But I think this will probably, you know, supercharge that a little bit. I don't think it will ever be mass production here in the United States, as far as I can imagine.
And Mariana, from the cotton fields to sending the samples that have been put together to specification sent to Madison, how long is that process typically?
When we get the samples, we start with the fabric cotton plant. We gather all the cotton once a year, and then we do the fabric. We knit the fabrics, and then the sampling process, it's depending on the brand. Some brands do 2 seasons, some do 4, some do a little, you know, like a holiday season in between. For the sample to be approved, like around 1 month, probably. And then there's the timing for the fabric, to knit the whole fabric for the production and to dye the fabric with requested colors. That takes a little longer, like 40, 45 days.
Okay, Robert, hot take. What is the most coveted piece of clothing in your closet?
I better not say it's my Fair Indigo t-shirt. That'll sound like a sell job. So I'm going to say it's my dad's flannel shirt that I inherited from him after he passed away. I think it was made in the 70s. It's something I don't wear very often, but it is something that I always see in the corner of my closet, and I really love it.
Oh, that you cherish. Mariana, how about you?
I think I'm going to go with one of our t-shirts. It's just like some of the t-shirts I have for maybe 10, 12 years. Pima is a very special type of fabric that you get out of Pima, that you're not going to get it from any other kind of seed that you plant.
Well, Mariana and Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's been great to talk with you.
Thanks.
That is Robert Benke, co-founder and president of Fair Indigo, a Madison-based clothing brand, and Mariana Otoya. She and her brother run their family's apparel business in Peru. And earlier, we spoke with Milwaukee's Iris Acevedo, owner of a sewing and design company.